Montanans opposed to more coal trains are taking their concerns to a Washington hearing. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight, a Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce looks into the commission that hears complaints about judges. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with climate scientist Steve Running about the new UN climate change report coming out this Friday. The Army Corps of Engineers wouldn't come to them, so they're going to the Army Corps. A group of about 30 Montanans are on their way to Spokane to testify at an Army Corps-sponsored public hearing this evening. That's part of an environmental impact statement for a proposed coal export terminal at Longview, Washington. The Northern Plains Resource Council, a Montana conservation and agricultural group, chartered vans to pick up the passengers in Billings, Livingston, Bozeman, and Missoula. MPRC member and Greeno resident Janet McMillan is one of those Montanans planning to testify in Washington State this evening. McMillan says the proposed Longview terminal would have profound impacts here in Montana.
There will be serious impacts to Missoula, Billings, Bozeman, Livingston, Helena, and all the little crossings across Montana. If you've ever had to sit and wait for three coal trains to go across when you're waiting, say, at Avon, and maybe you needed to get to the doctor or you had an emergency, that the fact that there is going to be so much increase in coal traffic will have serious impact, not only from the point of view of emergency service delays, but increased noise and health risks from the diesel fumes that the trains put out, and delays both in cities and in the country.
McMillan says her concerns aren't limited to train-related delays and diesel emissions.
If those coal ports are built, that will impact Montana because that will encourage tearing up the Otter Creek coal tracks to send that coal across Montana in a lot more, many more trains, as many as 30 or 40 a day, to send the coal off to China and to Asia to be burned and send the pollution back to us.
McMillan says it's disappointing the Army Corps of Engineers isn't holding scoping meetings here in Montana, but feels it's important the agency hears Montanans' concerns.
And in other news from around the state, Missoula public health and child care advocates say President Obama's proposal to increase federal tobacco taxes would put 1,000 more Montana children in preschool programs. They add it would also prevent thousands of kids from getting hooked on tobacco in the first place. Obama's fiscal year 2014 budget proposes to expand federal funding for early education programs with a 94-cent per pack increase in the federal cigarette tax. The plan includes a proportional increase in the federal tax on other tobacco products. A report issued today by a coalition of nine national organizations says that under this proposal, 2 million American children from low to moderate income families would have access to high quality preschool programs by the 10th year. It says over 1,500 Montana children would get access to quality programs within the first year alone. The report says less than half of the nation's four-year-olds are currently enrolled in public preschool programs. Local advocates held a press event today at Missoula's YMCA Exploration Center as an early childhood education center serving 80 kids from 6 weeks to 5 years old. Kelly Rosenleaf of Missoula Child Care Resources says children are wired to learn the fastest within their first 5 years. She says most parents of young children are working and don't have the time to personally provide their kids an adequate early education. Nor, she says, can they afford the expense of quality preschool programs. She supports the president's plan to expand early education with an increase in the tobacco tax.
What we know is that children, especially low-income children, who get off to a better start, have a high-quality early care and education system. They're more likely to do well in school, more likely to graduate, more likely to go to college, more likely to own a home, less likely to get involved with the criminal justice system, and it more than pays for itself. In fact, every dollar invested in early childhood returns $7 to the economy. So it's an investment we should all care about and we should all support.
The Raising Smart, Healthy Kids in Every State report says the president's plan to significantly increase federal tobacco taxes would prevent 5,300 Montana kids from becoming addicted smokers. American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network's Kristen Page Nye says it makes sense to keep tobacco prices high to keep the product out of young people's bodies.
Each year in Montana alone, 1,400 Montanans die from their use of tobacco, and 3,700 youth tried smoking for the first time. So we know if we are able to be successful in increasing the tax on tobacco products, that fewer kids will start the habit and more money will go into important programs like early childhood development.
Missoula Family YMCA spokesman Jason Shearer says Obama's plan represents an important investment.
An individual success, making childcare affordable to a person who does not have the same opportunities, is an opportunity for us to set them on a path to be self-sustaining, to be fully developed. This is a simple, low-cost, common-sense opportunity to take a huge quantum leap forward in addressing two critical issues that suck money out of our economy and hurt children.
Kristen Page Nye points out there's been a 40% reduction in youth tobacco use over the past 10 years in Montana. During that time, she says the tobacco tax has been raised twice on the state legislative level and once in the federal level.
Law enforcement officers in southeastern Montana continued searching today for a 36-year-old Idaho man suspected in a carjacking. The Billings Gazette reports Little Bighorn College and Crow Agency was on lockdown this afternoon after Rodney Cyber of Nampa was believed spotted on the Crow Indian Reservation. College President David Yarlott said he ordered the lockdown at 2 p.m., but was lifting it about an hour later after authorities said the suspect had moved south of town. The lockdown affected about 200 students. Officials have been looking for Cyber since September 18th, when he allegedly threatened a welding supply company employee in Nampa before taking a company van. Cyber disappeared into a cornfield after the van crashed. He fled officers in Hardin on Monday after a motel called in a trespassing complaint.
The Montana Judicial Standards Commission is now reviewing a formal complaint filed against a district judge who sentenced a former teacher to just a month in prison for raping a student. Women's rights advocates filed the complaint earlier this week, accusing District Judge G. Todd Baugh of showing bias when he said the 14-year-old victim was older than her chronological age. The complaint also faults Baugh for giving former teacher Stacey Rambold a light sentence, which prosecutors have since appealed as illegal. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce speaks with the chair of the Judicial Standards Commission, Missoula District Judge Ed McLean, about how such complaints are processed.
Judge McLean says five members sit on the Judicial Standards Commission: two district judges elected by the Montana Judges Association, two lay people appointed by the governor, and one member of the Montana Bar Association.
That is appointed by the Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court.
The commission hears complaints about ethical violations on the part of judges. They can then decide to file a letter of admonishment to this judge, or if the actions of the judge are considered offensive or egregious enough, the commission can lodge a complaint with the Supreme Court. The High Court then has the power to go so far as to remove the judge from the bench. Chair McLean says about 80% of the complaints filed with the Standards Commission are dismissed, without even requesting a response from the judge complained against.
It's an unhappy litigant that does not like the decision of the judge. That's an appellate matter.
He says the commission asks for a response from the judge with the remaining 20%. The response they get usually flushes out 15 of that 20%. Only with a very small number does the commission file a complaint with the Montana Supreme Court. Officials say just six complaints have reached the high court in the last 25 years. As for the complaint against Judge Baugh,
I can appreciate that we're dancing around one particular case here, you know, but I really can't tell you what we would do on that until I read the complaint and had a consensus of the board, you know, of the commission.
The commission meets quarterly. Judge McLean says there would not be enough time to get a response from Judge Baugh by the October 9th meeting. So McLean says the commission will probably not make a decision on whether to send the complaint to the Supreme Court until after the first of the year. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
A Butte man charged with taking a pickup truck from a bar parking lot told police he did it because he didn't feel like walking home. The Montana Standard reports 34-year-old Stephen Richard Jarvis II is charged with felony motor vehicle theft for taking a Ford pickup from outside a Butte casino early Monday. Butte Silver Bow Sheriff Ed Lester says the truck's owner found it parked along the street. Jarvis was arrested at his home just down the street from where the truck was parked. He was jailed with bail set at $25,000.
A 250-pound black bear kept Kalispell police officers busy for several hours as they hazed the animal out of town, twice. Officer Ryan Bartholomew told the Daily Inner Lake that the police received several reports of a bear on the west end of town at about 10 p.m. Monday. He says officers used their spotlights to keep the bear moseying along as they pushed it toward the Foy's Lake area southwest of town. However, about an hour later, the bear was back. Officers eventually pushed the bear back up North Main Street and toward the Lawrence Park area in the northeast part of town by 1:30 a.m. yesterday. Patrol Captain Tim Faulkner said the department hasn't received any more reports of bear sightings by yesterday afternoon.
A northern Montana man has recaptured the state's giant pumpkin record with a 1,160-out-pound gourd he raised in his grandfather's garden in Shelby. Kyle Koshmetter used a backhoe to lift it into the back of a pickup truck to haul it to Ronan for the Big Sky Giant Pumpkin Growers Association weigh-in last Saturday. His pumpkin beat the old record of 1,039 pounds set last year by Emmett May of Polson. Koshmetter, 34, last held the state record in 2010 with a 782-pound pumpkin. May answered with an 893-pounder in 2011. The Great Falls Tribune reports the giant pumpkin is on display at Shelby Paint and Hardware. Koshmetter said he's thinking about having the community help carve it into a jack-o'-lantern for Halloween.
The first comprehensive report by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change since 2007 will be released this week, and it's expected to confirm with little doubt that humans are causing global warming. The IPCC's work on climate change won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. University of Montana Regents Professor of Ecology Steve Running was a member of the panel that assembled that report. In this feature interview, he speaks with News Director Sally Mock about what to expect from the new report coming out Friday.
Each one of the measurement sets being done worldwide, you add six more years to every graph is what it amounts to. And more modeling analysis, bigger computers to run bigger scenario projections. Obviously this is a science topic that there's lots of activity, and 6 years worth of research is a big body of new knowledge.
And two of the big areas that they are going to be giving us information about are the warming of the ocean and the melting of ice around the globe.
Yeah, it looks like this time around that those will be two of the big topics, that and methane emissions from the Arctic tundra is probably a third topic that I imagine there's going to be more than just the normal play in the topic.
One thing the report will say overall is that scientists are, quote, 95% certain that this warming is human-caused.
So happens I was reading a journal article not 2 hours ago that had just finished a survey of published literature on climate topics. They say the number is 99.3%, that only 0.7% of the papers, and I think it was 12,000 papers that they surveyed, voiced any skepticism about global warming science. And that the other 99.3% support the fundamentals of global warming science as widely reported.
Will that put the debate to rest, do you think?
No, because there's enough people that have an economic state in the status quo that even if they can claim one scientist still standing, I think they'll keep trying.
And there will always be one scientist still standing.
Oh, right? Yeah, because they get a lot of notoriety by doing so.
The 2007 report, as you know, Dr. Running, had some mistakes in it, and that hurt the credibility of the IPCC. Do you think they've regained their credibility, that this report will reestablish that?
Well, I know that I was in Geneva at the IPCC office in 2008, and I talked to the office staff about the whole issue with the 2007 report. There was really only one very notable error, and that was the Himalayan glaciers melting by 2035 when it was supposed to be 2350. And
just 300 years off.
Yeah, only 300 years off. We round things off. And they admitted clearly in retrospect that they were so relieved to get the document out. They just kind of all went on vacation and just were totally unprepared. They just had no, I guess they would call it a damage control plan at all. And so when these sort of criticism and in specific quotation of what pretty quickly was identified as an error came out, they just had no game plan of what to do and how to talk to the press, how to craft an explanation. Well, how to find out what went wrong first. And the sad truth is I read that exact sentence in review. And I thought, that sure sounds off. But it wasn't my chapter, and so I didn't do anything about it. And I'll go to my grave kind of kicking myself. People say that a couple other people had seen it also in review and commented, and they just didn't bother with it.
Everybody needs an editor. Trust me on this.
Oh, yeah. But I know the IPCC organization as a whole, the author leaders, they are way smarter this time about dealing with whatever comes in terms of blowback, and particularly if perceived errors are identified, which out of 2,000 pages is pretty easy.
Another sort of preview of the report says that there has been a decline in the rate of warming over the last decade, and that's true, right?
Right, yeah. That's probably going to be the topic that gets the most press, is the single warmest year on record was 1998. It was the biggest El Nino in history globally. And since then, that record hasn't been exceeded. Now, we haven't had any big downturn, but we haven't continued to basically march up in global temperature, even though the carbon emissions have marched up every single year except 2009, we've had an increase in emissions. And so the connection between the emissions and the immediate feedback to global air temperature has not been there, and it's something that isn't well explained.
But in your mind and in the mind of the IPCC, this is not a sign that climate change is not going to be the serious problem that they expect.
No. We certainly, and of course, I have to remind audiences, we don't want climate change to happen. We just want our science to have complete understanding. And so if it turned out that there's some new understanding that global warming won't be as bad as we thought, we would welcome it as much as anybody else. But for right now, with our current understanding, we're certain that greenhouse gases are still piling up in the atmosphere. We're certain that this additional energy trapping is occurring, but it could be going a number of places. It could be off melting ice. It could be going to the bottom of the ocean. It could be growing forests faster. There's a number of other ways that this energy could be being transferred within the climate system and not as directly connecting to the air temperature, which is only one of the metrics that we follow. If it continued like this for 20 more years, then that would be a 30-year period where we would have to say, all right, whatever we thought the system did has to be rethunk. But unless this continues for at least another decade or more, at the moment we see this as just part of typical variability in a complex system.
Do you expect that this latest report, Dr. Renning, will be the report that kicks governments into changing policy in a more expedited way or not?
No. Basically, the whole rest of the world is waiting for the U.S. right now. And I don't see any amount of new data to help our Congress get itself going on this or much of any other topic. And so I'm from my international travel and friends, most other nations are willing to commit to a number of things if the U.S. and China would the two big emitters would come on board. And since the U.S. Congress isn't going to do a thing, and everybody knows it, I don't expect this to make any immediate policy difference at all, I'm sorry to say.
What would, do you think?
I can't tell what it would take. After the hurricane last year, right at election time, after some of these wildfire seasons, after the record low Arctic ice melt in 2012, you wonder, well, what, you know, what more evidence is going to matter? And so I really think the people that are disrupting progress aren't going to be swayed by any more facts, because we've already been piling facts on them for years and years.
The new EPA rules on coal-fired plants, helpful?
Yes. See, I think that what's really going on now is the Obama administration knows there's no use going to Congress and trying to get anything passed. And so they're trying to work within the authority that they already have in whatever way is possible. So I think this is a very conscious strategy to within each agency to look around and see what they can do right now and not bother trying to have some big battle in Congress that they know nothing like this will go through the House. So those emission regulations for electric power plants are a very big deal. The new gas mileage standards for vehicles are a very big deal, because those are pushing both of those industries in the right direction. And we're already seeing the industries respond in the way that we need.
Well, I look forward to reading the new report and having speaking with UM Regents Professor Steve Running, climate change expert and also a member of the 2007 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that won the Nobel Prize. Dr. Running, thanks for coming and giving us a preview of this report. Appreciate it.
All right.
Now for tonight's forecast. For west of the Divide, there is a winter storm warning in effect from 6 p.m. this evening to noon tomorrow for snow above 5,000 feet for the Butte and Blackfoot region and 6,000 feet for the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains, and until midnight tonight above 6,000 feet for the West Glacier region. Tonight, rain is likely in the valleys with lows in the upper 20s to mid-30s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. For central Montana, there is a winter weather advisory in effect until noon tomorrow for snow above 5,500 feet for the Rocky Mountain Front, as well as Cascade County, central and southern Lewis and Clark County, Judith Basin, Fergus, and Marr counties. Tonight, expect snow and a chance of rain with lows in the 30s. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies, bringing snow and a chance of rain through the day. High should be 45 to 55 degrees. And for southwest Montana, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until noon tomorrow for snow for elevations above 5,500 feet for Broadwater County and below 5,500 feet for Beaverhead, Madison, Jefferson, and Gallatin counties. There's also a winter storm warning in effect until noon tomorrow for elevations above 5,500 feet for snow for those same counties. Tonight, expect snow and rain in the valleys with lows 25 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow should be cloudy with snow and rain and highs in the 40s. And now for the editorial comments of Mary Sheehy Moe.
It's a new beginning, I tell my grandson at the schoolhouse door. Kindergarten, you'll learn new things and make new friends. It's going to be great. Joe isn't buying it. Three older kids whirl by shrieking, and he shrinks back against the wall. A few feet away, a little girl with French braids does too. What's your name? I ask her. I get a miserable Celia in response. What a pretty name, I say. Celia, this is my grandson, Joe. It's his first day at school. Is it your first day, too? Celia nods and sidles away from me. A smartly dressed little blonde approaches. I'm Anna, she tells me. Joe's in my class. Hi, Joe. Hi, Joe says, suddenly preoccupied with an inventory of his backpack. A third grader with his hair in stiff spikes intervenes. You're not supposed to be here, he snarls, his fists on his hips. You can't stand by the wall. You have to stand on your animal. Oh, buzz off, my inner child wants to say, but I cling to adulthood. Our animal? What animal? They're over there, Spike growls, pointing to the tarmac. You line up by your teacher's animal. You can't stand by the wall. It's the best advice I'm getting in this confusion of swirling, shrieking kids, so I grab Joe's hand and beckon to Anna and Celia. We go to an area where other adults are positioning their kids into something that approximates a line. I find the right animal and shepherd my three behind it. Just in time. A loud bell of the type you only hear in schools signals that the time for parting has come. Parents and grandparents hug their kindergartners and fade away like sad, shrinking ghosts. Some children cry. Some adults do, too. Bye, Joe, I say, perky as pie. Have fun. Bye, Grandma Mary, he responds, his voice as hollow as his eyes. Then his teacher ushers him and his line into the school. First days at school are always hard, but this one is especially so. Joe's not the only one facing a new beginning. It's a new day for his mom, too, a new job in a new town. In the new economy, she and her husband have been unable to sell their house, so he remains working in their old hometown while Joe starts school in their new one. They've joined the ranks of fractured families doing what they have to do to ensure that a new beginning leads to a happier ending. At least their separation is temporary. Statistics aren't reassuring for children in one-parent homes. They're more likely to have academic, emotional, and health problems, less likely to succeed. Those outcomes can be negated by the significant involvement of just one other caring adult, and the more, the merrier. My husband and I are taking turns being that adult. Stewing over hollow little Joe last weekend, I was reminded of another child starting school while his mother made a new beginning. Her siblings swooped in to fill the gaps. A brother and sister took him turns getting him home from school. On nights when his mom worked late, another sister fed him, bathed him, and put him to bed. He liked to be talked to sleep, so she would lie there with him looking out the window, commenting on the moon and the stars and the strange ways of cattle and leprechauns. One night he turned to her and mused, "My mom sure is smart." "She sure is," his aunt cooed. "She knows everything but three things," the boy continued. "Oh," his aunt said, intrigued. "Which three?" "That's the hard part," he replied. "She doesn't know yet, but once she does, she'll know everything." Then he rolled over and sank into sleep, content that his mother was just three mysteries short of perfection. His aunt listened to his soft breathing and marveled over the stretched, thin woman who could still plant this seed of contentment in her child, chuckling in anticipation of the day it would blossom into laughter. That boy beat back the statistical disadvantage. Today he's got a college degree, great health, and a heart of gold. Last weekend he got married and set out on a new beginning he couldn't be more excited about. Next week, I'll go back to caring for Joe again. When I pick him up from school, maybe Spike will still be snarling. Maybe Celia will still be sidling miserably away. Maybe Anna, so poised in the morning, will still be having meltdowns after school. But happiness is just a thing called Joe. I'm going to scoop him up, feed him, bathe him, and put him to bed. And sometime during that process, I'm going to tell him a story that begins this way. "Your mom sure is smart." This is Mary Sheehy Moe, retired, but still advocating for public schools and the children in them.
Mary Sheehy Moe is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtbr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.